Good morning.
Morning.
We will call the March 16th, 2014 Sussex County Council meeting to order. First thing on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson?
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. At this time, we have no amendments to the agenda.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda?
You got it.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second. Mr. Phillips, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. We had the minutes of February 25th. Any corrections, changes, or concerns about those?
I don't know if it matters,
Mrs. Deaver?
You had said March 16th. I've got March 18th.
I did. Well, it is March 18th.
Okay, fine.
I read it wrong, apparently.
I think I probably losing my hearing.
March 18th, my mistake. Any questions on the minutes of February 25th?
No.
Hearing none, they will stand approved.
Yes.
Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, we have two letters. The first is from Big Brothers Big Sisters of Delaware, Inc., thanking the council for the donation for the at-risk kids of Sussex County. Donation that was made this recently, and the others from the town of Laurel, thanking you, Mr. President, and council for the donation to the town of Laurel for monies to be used for the painting of the Laurel Heritage Museum.
That was for myself and Mr. Phillips both.
Yeah.
Okay. Correspondence from council?
Yes, I have something from Mr. Pete Schwarzkopf, our Speaker of the House, sent me a Route 1 Pedestrian Safety Task Force report and recommendations. I'll submit it if Chip could make some copies and distribute them for the rest of us and give me one back.
Any more correspondence from council?
Oh, thank you. No. Here, I'll give that to
Okay, Mr. Lawson.
Well, George, you did a good job.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've got a couple items this morning to discuss, the first being the discussion and possible action regarding the county council's meeting schedule. We placed this agenda item today to discuss the schedule that the county council currently observes. There has been some discussion among members previously in recent time regarding our meeting schedule. As you saw in your packet, there was a memo as well as some research conducted by our county attorney's office showing summary of county meeting frequencies in nearby jurisdictions, as well as a calendar of the remaining meetings for this council. We are scheduled to meet, as you know, for the next several months for the remainder of 2014, every Tuesday, except any previously scheduled holidays or days off. I guess from my perspective, since I was asked to bring my perspective forward, it does take quite a bit of time to prepare for our weekly meetings, for me to produce an agenda that has worthwhile information on it for you all to consider, and then the staff time, including county staff, as well as our external staff, including our attorneys, to produce and prepare the materials that you consider week to week. I will say that based on the nature of the county's level of activity right now, we've just had a downturn in the amount of items that we have week to week for you to consider, whether it be decision-making considerations where you actually vote on a motion or an ordinance, or whether it's just an update on materials that you should be made aware of. So that's my perspective in summary. There is quite a bit of work that goes into behind the scenes getting ready week to week for these meetings. With lack of agenda items currently right now, I don't want to feel as though we are wasting your time by making you come to Georgetown week to week, as we are scheduled to do for the remainder of the year, for limited issues on the agenda. Any questions about my perspective, I'm happy to answer, but hopefully
I hear a positive note there anywhere.
A positive note?
Yeah, I heard mostly the reasons not to have that many meetings. Maybe I didn't hear it right.
I guess I'm just trying to make you all aware of the fact that without agenda items that we would have, mm-hmm. where you need to approve contracts or there's an ordinance consideration, I will have to come up with things to put on the agenda for you guys to drive to Georgetown on a Tuesday to consider.
To keep doing it.
there may be a better method. And I don't mean to sound negative. I'm just giving you the current state of play. That may change as activity increases, but currently, as you can see on today's agenda, outside of my discussion points and Hal's updates, we have very few things to consider until the public hearings.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing a better job of coordinating the public hearing process between the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council so that we can combine public hearings, and you all will hopefully see that in the months to come, where multiple public hearings will be scheduled on a Tuesday so that when you have those types of land use decisions, there'll be more than one for you to consider on a given meeting.
Okay, they're clumping them together, trying to keep them together.
Yes, trying to, and also scheduling enough time in between the commission's consideration and the council's consideration so that the commission has actually rendered a recommendation.
So in other words, we won't be sitting here and hearing a hearing and can't act on it. We will have the ability to act on more of them than we've had in the past. Many times we just have to listen. It could be weeks before we get back to the topic. Okay, that sounds good.
Yes, and based on the system that we have with the public notice requirements that are in place, it is difficult to sort of forecast when these meetings and public hearings will take place. So we're doing the best we can right now, but also making the best use of your all's time with having multiple items on or multiple hearings at one day.
Well, you're putting them together, but you're not saying that they're all resolved by the time we get them.
No, but planning, if it's a hearing process that comes through the Planning and Zoning Commission, they have a certain time frame, 45
right.
days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm summarizing,
right.
but in general, 45 days to act.
Mm-hmm.
If there's enough time between when Planning and Zoning considers an application and makes a decision on that application and when you hear it,
mm-hmm.
There'll be a position a recommendation
sure.
from the commission for
mm-hmm.
you to consider. So the record mm-hmm. will be full by the time it gets to you.
And we'll be able to hear a public hearing of the applicant again, plus have planning and zoning's recommendation at the same time in many cases.
That's the intent.
Well, okay, perfect. Yeah, that's better. It's got to be better. The other thing is, what I'm gleaning out of this was you're not proposing any kind of permanent schedule. You're talking about more or less basically we're going to go into a kind of a flexible schedule.
Well, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay.
If we keep the current schedule week to week every Tuesday from now until the end of this year, which is what we have currently past the first meeting of January, there may be times where we lack agenda items.
Well,
and if we don't, we don't have to adjust a thing, but you will be coming to Georgetown and considering very few items. If we could have some flexibility perhaps where we could we could bundle some work on a Tuesday and make it a more robust, if you will, agenda, we could do that. I have a better idea week to week what our agendas look like. For instance, I asked Robin already next Tuesday, we have a pretty full agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have a meeting next week with a lot of items to consider.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have 9 days off for the rest of the year. I see that on the calendar. And we have a workshop coming up. How would that affect what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, so the snapshot that I showed you of this remaining calendar, we do have those 9 holidays or days off that are already pre-scheduled. Things that are already scheduled, like our public hearings that have been advertised.
Mm-hmm.
Those Tuesdays are obviously days that we will meet,
mm-hmm.
As well as the public workshop that will take place April 1. Those are days that we will meet. I guess what we would look to is, as we move forward, if there's some flexibility from council to consider how the agenda looks, and if I can report to you on a given Tuesday and tell you we've got a full agenda, let's meet next Tuesday, or in the opposite, we don't, perhaps taking a week off would be recommended.
What about the people that expect the meetings here at 10 o'clock? I mean, it's kind of, I know it's flexible, it'd be good for us, but I'm not sure if how they would feel about not knowing in advance.
Help to answer that, Todd. And I was thinking about that, too. In order to have a meeting here, we have to know the week ahead of time because the public has to know at least a week ahead of time. So that would, to me, that would, shouldn't be a problem there, Jim, I don't think. But I think it's like Mr. Lawson said, it's his recommendation, but it's up to the council whether we say, well, we should go with next week's work or not. And I think that's the important thing. And so I see nothing wrong with it. If the agenda's not loaded to bear and we don't have nothing, a whole lot to do, then we're sort of silly to sit up here and look like we're pretending we're doing something and not getting nothing done. But if we need to be here, then we should be here. And I think that's what you've allowed us to do, to decide a week ahead of time whether we should be here or not. And I think the public certainly has enough time to learn that we're not going to be here. I think even Dan Kramer would know that much. So I think the recommendation is good.
Anything else, Captain, Mr. Cole?
Yeah, I was just going to say, wait, I forgot already what I was going to say. Never mind.
Okay, and Miles was.
Got that quick.
Well, I guess
when he said Dan Kramer, I just.
You wait.
Mr. Phillips.
Blank your mind.
Mr. Phillips.
I live out in the wilderness, as you know. I'm the minority person here, and I'm sort of out of a particular loop that exists. And so I'm not going to think that this is a good thing at all. I need to be here, and I never thought we were wasting time, ever. And, you know, so.
I don't either. We wouldn't be here.
Well, the engineering department at times, Todd, has contracts that are date sensitive. So we obviously have to always be concerned about engineering department and all those infrastructure projects they've got, right?
Correct.
And Mike Izzo and his staff doesn't sit up there and look at a calendar and say, let's put the date here because of county council meetings. They just plug the date in and they hope that we can. So things like that, we have to be here, right?
Things like that will continue to be scheduled as needed. And, you know, the way it works any day except Tuesday, as we're preparing for the meetings, as these contracts, for instance, with engineering, as they get to a point where it's time for the council to make a decision, because without the contract fully executed and approved by council, it just goes nowhere. Those things get placed on the agenda, and we work together with all the departments as we are as they're doing the work, the day-to-day work, prior to something going on to an agenda.
So many times contracts will require us to be here at certain meetings, and it may be a short meeting. It may be one of those meetings where we just have to show up and do a couple contracts.
Yeah, and you know, I looked at maybe a more systematic way of trying to produce a schedule like some of the other jurisdictions, maybe every other week or the first Tuesday and the last Tuesday. The way our schedule as approved for the rest of 2014, it just wouldn't work. It's just too confusing to say we're going to meet every other week or Tuesday,
okay,
the first Tuesday and the last Tuesday, to give the public a system of rhythm of when we're going to meet.
Yes.
Perhaps as we go into 2015, we could choose to do something different.
So I will come by on those off weeks and pick up my mail and have a chat with you just to catch up on things, because I think it's important. And, you know, I do get a lot of mail here.
You can come 5 days a week.
May I?
The building's open 5 days a week.
Thank you, George.
What are the hours?
That's correct.
You post those hours?
George, you're nice.
Anything else from council?
That's it.
There were a few of us here yesterday as well.
There you go.
Sorry, Mr. Phillips.
Well, since the early 70s, when council was formed from the old levy court, they've been meeting every Tuesday, and someone's going to say, well, what has changed? And as I sit here and think about it, I would suggest that technology has changed. And even though I'm getting calls like all of you just about every day with constituent concerns, the ability to answer those concerns has become much more efficient primarily through email. We're able to contact not only Mr. Lawson, but just about every county employee through email if we need to. Cell phones have made it much easier to communicate. So I think things have changed in a way that the question does have merit, and I'm glad that we're giving thought to it.
Okay. Anything else from council? Okay, we'll move.
Got me
sorry.
A laptop, Mike.
There you go.
Got me a laptop.
That's right.
Keep up with daily news.
Sam Wilson's got an iPad. He's on Facebook. So we've made progress in this world.
That's right. He had to get rid of that what is it?
It's with mail. That's all I said.
Morse code. He dropped the Morse code.
Mr. Lawson, Wetlands Advisory Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. President. If council would allow me, I'm going to give a presentation from the podium
Certainly.
Today. Thank you.
Certainly.
Tissue down here from Sammy.
You use those? You need them? Just make sure you just take one or two.
Your private stash.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Since Mr. Godwin chose to return from his days off in Florida and was away last week, I was our representative at the Wetlands Advisory Committee in Dover last Wednesday. And if you recall, the council was given an update prior to that meeting, and there was a vote that was to be taken by the committee, and I will give you an update on that momentarily. There's three things I wanted to cover today. An update on the vote that was taken or not taken last week. A report on some of the presentations that were made at the committee, and then forecasting what's going to take place on the committee during their next scheduled meeting, which we will need some guidance from you all. On the proposed question for the committee members at their April 9th meeting. So as I conveyed to council on last Wednesday, the committee was given two questions regarding Denerec's purported regulation of wetlands in the state. And Mr. Godwin explained what those questions were at our last meeting and asked for your guidance, and council took a position to not allow any regulations over wetlands by DNREC. Due to the nature of the committee's meeting last Wednesday, in that we had several presentations, and those presentations would have affected maybe someone's position on those questions, we ran out of time. And the committee did not vote on those two questions. Nothing about the questions changed. It's just been delayed until the next meeting, which is April 9th. So that's our first update on that. The second part that I wanted to cover today, and this is what was presented at the committee by a Denerec staff person, is what we're actually talking about. And when Hal comes in here and gives you a 10-minute report on the committee activity that's taken hours and hours to produce the materials, and the committee meets and they meet for several hours, it's a quick snapshot. And I sit there sometimes and question, what are we actually looking at? Well, I found this presentation that the staff put together to be valuable in better understanding what the committee's mission and vision is. No, this is a presentation that was given last week by Denerec staff to the committee to talk about the wetlands that they are aiming to regulate.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to quickly go over this presentation with you. Hopefully it will help you better understand what the committee's mission is, as it did me. And also, if you have any questions about what was discussed, I can try to answer them. There's an unwritten rule: never use someone else's presentation as your own, and I'm running afoul of that. So I'm not a wetlands expert. I will repeat what was told. If there's questions I cannot answer, I will certainly get back to you. But there may be points that I am not able to address just because simply this is not my material. I fast forward it to this slide. This is the slide that breaks it down for what are we actually talking about here? The wetlands in the state. As you know, Category 1 is what they are purporting to protect. Now, overall, there's 320,000 total acres in the state of Delaware for wetlands as a whole, non-title and title. But we're only worried about Category 1, and those are the non-title wetlands. But this slide breaks it down even further. There's 242 total acres, and the Category 1 of that are 18,758. Category 2 is 223,000. These, in this box here, are regulated already. These are not. As you break it down further, these category ones can be broken down into isolated or not isolated, regulated or unregulated wetlands. These, not isolated, are regulated. These are regulated by the Army Corps currently, 12,983 acres. So they're eliminated in the need for regulations.
It's fresh water.
And I'll illustrate the difference between not isolated and isolated. But think about not isolated is, think of any pond in the county that you're familiar with. Red Mill Pond, Concord Pond, Salt Pond. As you leave the pond area and go upland into the streams and the tributaries where it's no longer looks like a pond, but it's still wet, that's the not isolated wetland area that we're talking about here.
Because they're contiguous to a body of water.
That's correct. They're right. touching that's other right. other parts of the water. Isolated
but
are basically...
also could be a dry ditch.
Isolated, I don't know, Mr. Wilson. Isolated are simply wetlands that are by themselves on an island, and I'll show you some pictures that they presented.
Unfortunately, I sit in a few of those meetings.
Okay, so what are we really talking about as we break this down? So this is unregulated, 5,000 acres in the whole state. Mm-hmm. The breakdown of the 5,000 acres is shown here. 85 acres is currently protected through conservation partnerships. 1,584 are protected because they're owned by the state or the federal government. And then 4,019 acres are what's determined by Deneric as vulnerable because they're privately owned. And since they are unregulated at this time, that is what they're seeking for us to protect on this committee.
Now, Todd, that's statewide again, that 4,000.
That is the whole state.
Do they have it broken down somewhere in this little presentation for just Sussex? Because we'll let Kent and Newcastle worry about theirs. But
yes, they do.
But isn't it already illegal to fill them in now? I mean, if you do that, isn't that breaking the law?
But you can dig them out.
Oh, that's what we're worried about?
What I'm picking up from the committee is it may not be permitted to fill them in, but it happens all the time because if you've got a isolated wetland on a piece of property and it's either unidentified or not regulated, filling in the wetlands happens, and no one knows about it.
Yes.
I do not know whether or not it's, quote, illegal.
If it is a private ditch and it goes to nobody else's property, you can fill it in. As long as it's on your property and does not go to someone else. Now, once it travels through your land, goes to someone else's land, then you don't have the right to fill it in.
Okay. All right, so I'll quickly go through the presentation and cover the points that were given. This is the gentleman's name that put this presentation together, Mr. Mark Biddle of Deneric, DWS. Okay. Again, we're talking about Category 1 non-tidal wetlands in Delaware. Here are the types of those Category 1 wetlands, as you can see listed here. This PowerPoint was in your packet, by the way. What is the total acreage? We just covered that. It's 18,758 acres. Here is a breakdown of those acreage. The ones here on the bottom are the vast majority of the Category 1s. It makes up 8% of the non-tidal wetlands. How are they mapped? Of the 18,000, most of the wetlands were mapped using map technology by DNREC. Some of them were ground level verified, meaning they were actually out on the ground looking at them.
So we're supposed to see those red down there?
No, Mrs. Deaver, and you can see them here. It's difficult to see, but on a computer with a monitor in front of you, you can hone all the way down in, and you'll see that, and you'll see an example of that.
It looks like around a Nanticoke or a Marshy Hope. It looks like down around a Great Swamp.
Yeah.
Great Swamp. Primarily, and then maybe up there around Milton,
Well, so if they're on your property, you're not going to be losing that use because you're not supposed to fill them in anyway. It's what I'm thinking. Does that not make any sense?
You can build in wetlands.
You can.
You can build. They'll give you a permit to build a house on pilings in the wetlands. The trouble is you can't put parking lots. You can't fill, theoretically. So when a developer takes a piece of ground, he's identified them. He could actually put houses. If you go to South Bethany, Cat Hill, you got homes sitting right in the wetlands, but then they had some of the driveways are actually boardwalks elevated even.
I mean, how would that affect this?
Well, I don't know. The Army Corps does permit
building of houses. The ones that aren't regulated by Army
Corps. But you're right. They don't like you to fill them, but they do give permits for 1 acre and stuff like that, or half acre, I don't know. Whatever. But anyway, go ahead. It's your presentation. I'm sorry.
I'm repeating someone else's presentation.
I understand. Yes.
I understand.
Okay. So, again, this is a breakdown, which we've already gone over the numbers. 12,000, not isolated, attached to other wetlands or waterways. 5,000, isolated. Again, I'll show you a better description. How are they currently regulated? We've just gone over that. 12,000 are regulated by the Corps, as they are assumed to be not isolated, connected to other waters. Denerec is using mapping tools to create these estimations. What remains vulnerable? Again, the number 5,000, which we broke down even further, 4,000, 1,000, and just under 100 in the graph I showed you. This is a picture of all the wetlands in the state of Delaware in yellow.
Mm-hmm.
320,000 acres, excuse mm-hmm. me. Again, on a computer closer, you would be able to see the red inside, which are the Category 1 breakouts. Public versus private, Mr. Cole, this is your question you asked. Here's a breakdown of just Category 1, 18,000 acres in each county. So by Denerec staff recommendation, they say that the privately held wetlands, because they're unregulated, are the vulnerable wetlands. So the blue is what they're looking at, would be their focus. Public, because it's currently owned by a government entity.
So in Sussex County, we look like we're, it's like 50-50. So half of them are definitely protected,
yeah.
And the other half are subject to maybe not being protected.
Are not protected.
Right? So we're better off in the other two counties, obviously. Look at that.
Correct. And the reason why we do have vast acreage of public land, think of the Redden Forest.
That's not a good word to use, protected, because it sounds like the farmers are not capable of protecting their own land. I don't think that's a good word to use.
It's a fair point.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, I feel I can protect my own farmland. Look, I drink my own water.
You'd be right.
And I breathe my own air.
Sam, approach.
As I do that,
excuse me,
I should be interested in what's coming off my farm.
Sam and Vance, just approach this as not an attack on agriculture. This is, we're talking about wetlands and the value of wetlands, and they're very valuable. So don't, it's not an attack, Sam.
I want to make sure it doesn't get there. That's what I'm making sure.
Well, you don't have to keep reminding us. We know what your position would be, but we're, as what I've heard so far, is not an attack on agriculture. So
I hope not.
Well, if they are that valuable, then somebody up there needs to buy them.
You just used the word, George. You just used the word.
I just want to stir you up. Come on.
You just used the word, we're not protecting it. And that's not a good word to use.
I protect you every time we go to the city.
Saying we're not farmers, okay. Don't protect
farmers. If you would,
thank you.
Please proceed.
Speed it up. This is another breakdown. The one isolated area that we're talking about, 5,000 acres, what does that make up? 0.5% of state land total. So again, a pretty small amount. I've gone over this slide, the breakdown. How much has been lost? This is a pretty telling slide. This is Denerec's estimations. In the last 15 years, 28 acres of wetlands have been lost. Here it is, broken down in type.
And this committee of 28 or so have been meeting for months now, taking up all kinds of valuable time. And we're talking about 28 acres.
That's amazing.
People have too much time on their hands up there.
That's less than 2 acres a year.
No wonder this government doesn't have any money.
Okay. Now, this was very telling to me, because I'm sitting here in Georgetown hearing Mr. Godwin's presentation and wondering, what are we really talking about? This is literal pictures of the DNRC staff that have shown wetlands that were identified and then the current land use. So this is a wetland in 1992. It's hard to see on the screen, but that they call this a pond.
It was a natural pond.
Natural pond,
okay.
Wetland here,
right.
Of category one, again, the kind we're looking
mm-hmm.
at.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward to 2012, it's
gone.
Mm-hmm. We believe, and the slide was discussed at the meeting last week, that this this land was cleared for this person's driveway here.
Mm.
Okay. So private landowner putting in a house, and that's what happened. Here's another one. Coverdale, Atlantic White Cedar. This was in 1992, forest, identified wetlands. 2012, this is now a borough pit. Pretty unique one here. You can see the yellow island here. This is illustration of isolated because it's an island. This is Route 273 in Newark. So as the presenter said last week, an illustration of public use where a wetland was disturbed for the greater good of putting in 273.
Nowadays, they make the state go and create one somewhere
Correct.
Else, like
Correct.
They did up here north on one, off of 113. They try to create.
The county, too. When we did our county airport expansion and there were wetlands found on our land, we had to mitigate that by creating new wetlands down off of behind Frankfurt-Dagsboro area, and we currently have that land in place. Okay.
Talk about what George is talking about. I know a little more about that. All the way from Allendale, all Allendale, they used to call it Allendale Swamp years ago. Of course, today it's dry because mm-hmm. of the ditching. That's some of the questions that people get. He's talking about why are we ditching, and I keep saying, well, we lowered the water table. But anyway, they took and went and came north along Wilson Road, not Wilson Hill, but Wilson Road, bought a 100-acre farm, and dug that farm, took all the dirt, and dug it so deep, they dug it too deep, that the frogs they brought over could not swim. So they had to go ahead and fill it back in, a lot of it, and put little islands in there so these frogs have an island to get up on. So that's the kind of, this is the kind of engineering, and I mean, they are so, this wetlands, and all these people are so engineered and so far ahead of us, that when they do things like that, you begin to wonder if they know what they're really doing. And more than the people that lives on this land. I lived on this land all my life. My father lived there and his father. So we got a general idea what is best for this piece of land. And that's what boils me when I have strangers that have done enough read books. And with no scientific reasoning behind them, they come along. It's just like weather change. It just makes me aggravated. That they're so smart they don't even bother to tell the farmer anything. They just demand it what he's going to do. I've said enough.
Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir.
This committee's concerned about the loss of wetlands. There's another committee concerned about sea level rise. Won't the two cancel each other out?
The other concern about what?
Or just can get together and just have one meeting instead of two different meetings.
Well, sounds like this problem's going to take care of itself.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is the final example, I believe, somewhat of what Mr. Wilson was talking about. This is a farmland, 1997, wetlands, 2006, mm-hmm. and then 2012. If you could see closely, these are wet areas of water. This is the farmer's obviously tilling this property, but over time it has remained wet, but through ditches or other means has been able to work around it.
The hedgerow is probably a ditch going through that hedgerow. Probably.
So they're saying that the value of wetlands has been lost in a situation like what are they saying?
This is identified wetlands.
Showing those pictures.
Any farmer that works any ground in Sussex County knows that there's low-lying ground that
mm-hmm.
some years you get through, some years you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell over time that this has stayed here, and they've tilled around it as much
mm-hmm.
as they can. They were illustrating this to show that they get as close as they can to this, but perhaps have put in some kind of contour that may help in the drainage of the property here.
I think Joan has asked a good question. A good question. What did they really lose by tilling through that piece of so-called wetland? What has the state really lost if that piece of ground was really that dry and you can plow over it most of the time?
Well, it's a general question.
But it's a good question. What have we really lost?
Well,
what's
Sam,
the big deal about this?
Right, Sam, the Army Corps of Engineers does not prohibit tilling of.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well,
so this,
that's a rule. That's true.
Right, I mean, you're allowed to do that. So okay. this may not be a lost piece of wetlands. It could have been a picture during a dry period.
In other words, the picture's good now. What I'm talking about is the future picture. Why are we now working on wetlands, and where are they trying to go? And we're trying to get back to what we're trying to say. This is protected, see? We're trying to take away private ownership. That's what it's really coming to. And that's where the problem's at. As it is today, I have no problem.
Well, I think
I'm looking to the future here.
Okay,
I'm looking
at
10 years, 20 years.
The marketplace, Sam, has dealt with this. If the developers I know down at the coast in the beach area, and I know quite a few, they've found that it's cheaper to avoid the wetlands
Absolutely.
Than to mess with them. And then they end up taking those wetlands and turning them into open space, and then they put lots abutting them, and they charge more for them. So the marketplace with the developers has taken care of it, because when they buy a piece of land, they have to do all these surveys and all these investigations for wetlands, et cetera. So I don't think it's an issue too much. That's why you're seeing maybe such a small loss of wetlands. Now, with the farmer, you're allowed to till them, you're allowed to timber them, you're allowed to do all that stuff still. And so there's really no that many restrictions on the farmer still.
George, our next-door neighbor.
But wetlands are important.
Our next-door neighbor, if you want to cut down a tree, it has to be notified to the public and say if it's okay or not. It has to notify the government, I mean.
Who's this? Where's this?
You've got to get a permit.
Your neighbor?
Our neighbor in Maryland.
Oh, your neighbor in Maryland. I thought you're talking about your neighbor.
Delaware, too.
And it's Delaware, too.
I've got a piece that we're talking about timbering.
And here we are.
We've got to notify Denver.
I didn't notify
but you,
them.
They don't wait. You may have to notify them, but you have to get a permit to cut trees?
On my understanding. Now, I
That's
would
just a permit.
Say
doesn't
that
say
aerial,
you can't do it.
Aerial photographs can be deceiving, and they're proven to be highly inaccurate if someone wants them to be.
And I'm definitely not sitting here picking on Todd.
No, he
don't make the regulations.
No.
He's the messenger, and that's all. And that's why I'm taking it.
Well, let's pick on the messenger.
I'm just trying to find out what some of the purposes of this.
Well,
and, I'm not.
So a universal theme is these wetlands have been lost for reasons that we all know, and there's to some an environmental value in these wetlands, so they should be protected. At least at what we see now, or what we can identify now, should be protected. That's sort of the question of the vision of Denerec, and the mission of this committee is to consider to what extent should we protect this value to
so
the environment.
So that would remain a freshwater wetland? Would it remain a freshwater wetland or not?
Well, there's varying levels.
I
believe if a regulation
was
put in place,
or what?
If a regulation was put in place,
can't till it.
There would be limited use of that property in the future, depending on what the regulation looked like, in the name of protection.
Well,
and
there's
if
something.
We required buffers the way we do on tidal waters, then that would mean that we'd have to have a buffer to keep what's draining into that thing, so to filter some of that water. We don't have buffer around non-tidal wetlands, and I'm just asking. So I'm trying to picture. So we're talking about something that couldn't be tilled if they had what they're wanting.
When it comes to development, most of too bad Lawrence isn't here, you will see that most of the developers provide buffers around their isolated wetlands or any wetlands on their project, because they know when they get through the PLUS report that Dover will like seeing that. They also still get their density. They still lay out their things. It's easy for them to work around, like I said, a piece of wetland from the beginning when it's raw land.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no issue too much there today. We just want to make sure they identify them and how they're going to protect them. And that's what we see on every plan that comes in front of us.
Well,
rarely have I seen a place where the guy says, I propose to put a house now in the wetlands. They just don't do it anymore.
You know, our cluster ordinance has probably protected more wetlands than any government regulation ever could. And that's a good example of an ordinance that provides flexibility and allows a developer to move those units over to one side, cluster them in an area of a parcel without losing their density, at the same time protecting the sensitive areas of a property. So, I mean, if that's what Dover could come up with, I think we would be interested in talking to them. But to come up with new regulations, I think this council has spoken loud and clear.
Can I go back to one question that Mr. Phillips raised earlier? There is a concern on the committee, just a general concern of the use of the mapping techniques, because use of mapping techniques is not perfect. So these numbers that we are showing, because they're based on mapping techniques, are a very close number, but they're not exact. Here's an example of identified wetlands, and you can see isolated here, isolated down here, and then the development went in and went around the isolated wetland here and isolated wetlands here.
Mm-hmm.
So to, I believe, a few folks' points, when the houses are being built, they are not being built where the wetlands are identified.
And you can see they even provided, Sam, buffers around each of those. The homes are away from it. And I think Lawrence and Planning and Zoning actually don't like to see lot lines go into these areas, so that they want the homeowners associations to control them and protect them. So I think the developer is addressing it, and again, the marketplace has seen that these are valuable. Those homes next to those wetland sites, they get more money for them because it's open space. And we want open space in all our development, and that's where we get it.
They're fairly unstable, though, aren't they? I mean, the level of the water from time to time. I've seen houses built right at having the low-lying woods in back of their house, and then all of a sudden the people discover it was protected area and doesn't belong to them, and the water is sort of creeping up all the time. I'm just wondering, they must be very flexible, I guess. Maybe that's the
well,
word.
Well, P&Z has permitted, there is down around the beach area, some homes that are way too close to the stormwater retention ponds or these areas, and that's where we could easily address them with setbacks and stuff from maybe an area like that without, again, affecting anything. Allow it, instead of 30-foot setback in the front, make them go 20 feet, then they can get away. So we could put in our ordinances things to do that without affecting the thing.
Todd, this is a very good presentation, and I appreciate the president allowing the dialogue. There is one point I think that should be recognized. Farmers are only allowed to farm wetlands if they have been prior converted. And the Soil Conservation District and NRCS come out and they have mapped most farms and they've identified the prior converted wetlands. And there is a concern by the farming community that as government continues to creep toward the heavy-handed regulation of wetlands, that they will at some point in time get around to saying, well, these are wetlands that you're farming. Granted, they were prior converted wetlands before the old regulations came into place, but now we are going to have to take a look at them, and that could disrupt our entire ag economy here in Sussex County, I believe.
I've even saw Vance where a person wanted to put in a pivot.
Talk in your mic there, Sam.
I saw where people wanted to put in a pivot and maybe like in a quarter of an acre of a woods there. And, boy, to get that woods removed and then get by the wetlands people, you can spend years of arguing and finally you might win. But as Vance says, it's the future we've got to look after here. We've got to look and see why are we spending money? Why would I spend money to push up a half acre land or quarter acre land and be wasted and not be able to farm and not have rains enough to know it's wetland? That's the problem. That's where it comes from. We should, as farmers, I think we should be pretty good managers. I think we're supposed to be, and we don't stay in existence if we're not. We got to know how to handle money and what to do. And I agree with George. I'm not totally against wetlands. Don't get me wrong. I think it flushes our bays and all these things. But when you come in 10, 15, 20 miles into the mainlands and then start getting on the backs of farmers thinking they don't know what's right from wrong or what is wetlands, what's not wetlands, that's where I begin to have a big problem. I was down to down near tunnels. It's not tunnels land, but I saw water that was actually that came in and flushed the property, and they built these condominiums on stilts to me. I thought, my goodness, why aren't these people about wetlands? When here, if I had anything look like that, they'd want to shut me down. That's what my problem is. It's Look, if I had not had the problem with wetlands over the years, I wouldn't be here talking. I wouldn't be knowledgeable. But I know if you don't watch this wetlands deal, they'll step over the boundary, and we will be controlled. It's just we can't get around it.
Todd, is the Department of Agriculture a representative sitting on this committee?
Yes.
Are they vocal? Do they?
Yes.
Interject?
Yes.
Do you feel that they're protecting the interests of agriculture in some of their comments? Or, of course, you've only been to one meeting, so maybe you don't know. Maybe Hal, somebody, is there anybody, is there the sense that the Department of Agriculture's representative is actually supporting the agricultural community's concerns, like, say, a Sam Wilson out there? Hal's shaking his head yes, it looks like, so is there a sense that the...
Former State Representative Bobby Walls is the representative for the Ag. And he's doing an excellent job, and he participates.
That's what I want to know.
He's there,
okay,
he's participating.
There you go, yeah. Sam.
Democrat.
Yeah.
Well, that's the best you can do. The only thing could change, here's what could change. You could have a county council of a bunch of people who have a frame of mind that more regulations. So in Dover, the same thing could happen. So Vance's concerns that in the future, the Chicken Little, the sky might fall in on these wetlands. It may happen, but right now, I don't think this. My sense is Sussex County's council is ready to
George,
stop all that.
Unfortunately, farmers don't farm from week to week. It's year to year.
I understand.
And even 5 years, 10 years. When you put an irrigation system in, that thing costs you hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you're not just thinking, well, am I going to make a profit on it this year?
I understand.
You're thinking about it. So it's a long-term situation. And this is what I'm talking about, long-term. This is what I'm looking at.
We're talking about identified 25 acres, and that's what we're talking about, and that doesn't grow or change. Or in other words, are we identifying certain areas if this thing gets passed? And is it about 25 acres only that we're talking about?
Well, in total, it's that number we broke down, 4,000 acres of Category 1.
Well, but the part we were looking at in Sussex County was very small number, I believe, unregulated.
No, we lost 28 acres.
Okay, so how many in our county that has to be affected by this?
They didn't have that breakdown.
Oh.
You could try to say it's 50% of the private-public breakdown, but we don't know how much because the numbers I'm dealing with are statewide. So the 5,000 acres broken out 4,000, 1,000, and 85. This is the vulnerable areas right here.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about statewide. They do not have a breakdown by county.
Okay. But they're just saying they're there. Are they identifying certain pieces of land?
Yes.
So we know what we're talking about.
Yes.
Who we're talking about, where.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Are they making the property owner, did you get a sense that the property owner's being notified that we're looking at the wetlands on your piece of property? Like,
I would say no. I would say only the ones that are verified by being there on the ground looking at wetlands that they are aware of this.
What was those state resource maps or something? Was it Everett or something the state was coming up with that nobody was notified and then all of a sudden the property owner, was that advanced or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to see a situation like that where we go through a big process, you know, and then all of a sudden, oh, we forgot to notify property owners.
Well, they have not notified individual property owners, Mr.
Right.
Cole. There is a point of clarification. I believe Bobby Walls is representing the federal government. He was appointed to one of those
correct
agencies. Mm-hmm. Farm Bureau is at the table.
Yes, and Department of Agriculture for the state.
So they're representative. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And correct. People can observe these meetings. Can they
are there developers on that committee?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's open to the public.
Unfortunately, it is a committee of 28, I believe.
Is there 28 or 20? 28, yes.
Heavy population of government employees on that committee. And when you go to making votes, Farm Bureau only gets one vote, even though they've got 4,000 members, and Department of Ag only gets one vote. So it's important, I think, that this body continue to be vigilant in helping Mr. Godwin and Mr. Lawson know the direction we want them to go.
Okay. I can wrap this up quickly now.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the last slides that they showed. So this is showing property lines, wetland identified here. So if there were some mechanism to protect this wetland, sorry to use that word again, whether it's to create a buffer or to purchase the land outright or a regulation that forbids any kind of use. This is an illustration of one that's set by itself on a parcel that's a parcel alone, fairly easy to identify and easy to work with. However, then you get into a situation like this. These are all isolated wetlands identified that cross property lines. So how do you regulate? How do you protect? How do you purchase? It becomes a little convoluted, I think is the point they were trying to make. And then you've got another example of that, where how would you address this in the forms that the committee is being asked to look at, whether it's regulation
Remember
or
the
incentive.
Piece of ground next to the railroad tracks here on Steiner Road? Mm-hmm. And we did that walk around on that land. I can guarantee you that nobody's going to farm it, most of it, and I believe nobody's going to develop it. So a lot of those severe cases like that are just impractical for anybody, you know, to, you know, put to these like ag uses or development uses. So they will pretty much remain that way because of the market again. There's no market.
Yeah, they're just
we're trying
people.
To mess with that kind of land.
Thank you for your patience.
You ought to attend more of those meetings.
Did he have anything to say, Secretary, about the vote?
There was a presentation by Secretary O'Meara prior to the vote, and then the vote got delayed. The Secretary strongly recommended approval of giving Deneric more or the authority over these wetlands, and which would mean regulations by their agency.
But we haven't seen any regulations
specifically
yet.
The regulations, no incentives?
He was asking the committee members to vote in favor of those two questions that were asked.
Right.
They were questions, but they were questions that would move towards giving Deneric the authority to regulate these Category 1 wetlands.
But you still can have incentives, can't you? You can still pass incentives.
Yes, and that's where my final point. The committee is going to be asked to review and comment on an incentive-based suggestion, and there's a number of programs that were presented to us. Okay. On the April 9th meeting, we will be asked to show our support or non-support of those incentives. What I'd like to do is come back to you with another presentation on those incentives that were presented to us and get your feedback along with Mr. Godwin so that when he goes April 9th and presents the council's position, we will understand.
You could tell how they're Vance's suggestion of the cluster housing in here, that we didn't really do it for wetland protection, but it was for flexibility and other reasons, but that's one of them. And you could just show how that has shown that as an incentive, we offer developer to do a cookie cutter where they can do this. They get the same density, and it's actually cheaper because they'll get some smaller lots. Their infrastructure cheaper, and they can save some open space.
I made exactly that case to the folks in the Delaware Home Builders 3 months ago.
Okay.
They approached me back around Christmas about a transfer of development rights as a possibility, as an incentive in this program. And I told them that we already had a plan that would achieve the goal, whereas we recognize that wetlands is open space, and then the clustering ordinance allows you to move the density into a smaller footprint. So our ordinances are already friendly to preserving the wetlands without any new regulation.
Right.
And that they should take a look at that if they thought that would, you know, if moving density around was really going to help them. This was already in place, so they've already heard that. But
in case the open area is wetlands, in that case, not just woods or something. Uh-huh. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Could I suggest that Mr. Lawson notify other Sussex County members of that committee when you're going to make a future presentation? So if they like to, they could come.
Okay.
Well,
yes.
I know how y'all feel, but I do think that I've taken the word of scientists that these wetlands are valuable, and I want to do everything that we can to preserve them. And I would not rule out regulations. I would prefer incentives, but I would not rule out regulations.
Well, people, first of all, have got to know the difference between bottom land
I just want to say.
And wetlands. And that's where
I just want to say where I am, that's all.
They don't know a bottom land from a wetland.
Well,
there's where the problem's at.
I've got one vote, and I'm going to make a big deal of it.
I know. Darren, I'll take that sometime to show you the difference.
Secretary's report, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, everyone.